Welcome to the Buddha Sasana Podcast. This talk was given by Bhikkhu Chintita in Austin, Texas.
Today we continue our discussion of dependent co-arising. Last week we talked about becoming. Today we will continue upstream to begin consideration of its conditioning factor, appropriation. The Buddha tells us, because of craving, appropriation, because of appropriation, becoming.
I want one of those, Mommy. Hey, Timmy's in my chair.
We teach small children a lot of concepts and values to help them function in the world, but we never have to teach them the concept, mine. With,
I want that.
They're already established in their way of personally identifying with aspects of their ever-flowing world of experience, of becoming someone, and of ensnarling themselves in this mass of suffering. A major theme we find in dependent co-arising is what we might call the scourge of the self. We'll see that this begins far upstream as the conceptual mistake of presuming the existence of an agent self, atta, that then puts itself into relation with other things, with cognitive and emotional implications at contact and feeling. That self actively seeks personal advantage in craving and appropriation and becomes fully manifest in a full-blown personality, sakaya, with a defensive sense of personal identity in a contoured environment at becoming. The course of this development is an escalating affliction on our well-being and wisdom. Fortunately, appropriation is also a point in which targeted practice can directly counter this scourge. The Pali word for appropriation is upadana, more often translated as attachment or clinging. Its derivation is upa, near, plus adana, take. So the compound means take up or appropriate. I prefer appropriate because it suggests assuming ownership improperly. Appropriation is the process of personal identification with the objects of the world as me or mine, thereby augmenting our personal footprint, that is, the scope of our personality. How I might appropriate something is described as follows. I regard it as me, for instance, my body. I regard it as mine, for instance, my sports car. I regard it as part of me, for instance, my irresistible smile, wit, or good looks. Or I regard myself as part of it, for instance, my family, ethnicity, or volleyball team. What I might appropriate as me or mine falls into one of four categories. Appropriation of sensuality, for instance, daily lunch of croissant, camembert, and cabernet, or vast riches. Appropriation of views, for example, that wealth is a mark of divine favor, or that education guarantees success. Appropriation of conduct and observances, for instance, a daily workout, or greeting everyone with a smile, or spending Saturday mornings in jhana, or an appropriation of a doctrine of self, for instance, as something that will take a few knocks but will endure forever. Let's talk about appropriation as the origin of becoming. We learn that becoming involves two processes, growth of our phenomenal world and the development of our personality or sense of identity imprinted on that world. We also say that the two twist around each other, mediated by craving. Cognizance, we saw, was the engine of growth. Appropriation is the engine of personal development. Each of these is a link upstream from becoming that sustains the dynamics of becoming. The five aggregates served in the last chapter primarily in the description of growth of the phenomenal world. They also appear as objects of appropriation in the Buddha's teaching. The following is a common refrain in the suttas. The uninstructed worldling regards appearance as self, or self as possessing appearance, or appearance as in self, or self as in appearance. He lives obsessed by the notions, I am appearance, appearance is mine. This passage is repeated as for appearance, so for feeling, perception, formations, and cognizance. Recall that the five aggregates, khandhas, provide a simple categorization of the world of experience in terms of modes of awareness. Given that anything we appropriate is found within the world, that is, our world of experience, and therefore among the aggregates, the totality of what we have appropriated in the world is called the aggregates of appropriation, upadana khanda. The aggregates of appropriation constitute our personal footprint, which is personality itself. Asked by her former husband about this, the nun Dhammadina repeated as follows.
Lady, personality is said. What is called personality by the Blessed One?
Friend, Visakha, these five aggregates of appropriation are called personality by the Blessed One. That is, the appearance aggregate of appropriation, the feeling aggregate of appropriation, the perception aggregate of appropriation, the formations aggregate of appropriation, and the cognizance aggregate of appropriation. These five aggregates of appropriation are called personality by the Blessed One.
In short, we are what we appropriate. The five aggregates refer to the world in general as we experience it, and the five aggregates of appropriation refer specifically to our personal footprint within that world, everything we choose to have a stake in as me and mine. Cleverly, the Buddha's choice of the term aggregates of appropriation reflects the fire simile for becoming, by which extinguishing a fire, nibbana, or Sanskrit nirvana, is cessation of becoming. For the word upadana can also refer to fuel for a fire. In the Buddha's time, probably wood, cow dung, grass, or certain kinds of oil. Since khanda, aggregate, refers to an unordered heap or pile, upadana khanda therefore refers to piles of firewood or other fuel. As long as we feed the fire through appropriation, becoming will continue to burn and nibbana will elude us. Appearance is burning, feeling is burning, perception is burning, formations are burning, cognizance is burning. The fire simile and its association with suffering also serves as a parody of the Brahmanical view of the desirability of fire. Okay, how do we appropriate sensuality? Sensuality, kama, is what we presume will provide a support for pleasure or gratification for us in a very broad sense. This includes things that are immediately felt, such as touch, taste, sounds, agreeable appearances, assets that support our needs, such as gold and silver, a stock portfolio, dignified clothes, house, car, a second house in the country, mobile home, boat, swimming pool, social relations such as family, friends, pets, fame, power, personal qualities such as beauty, wit, charisma, glamour, and so on. Our relationship to sensual pleasure is sometimes obscure in that both craving and appropriation are often driven more by the thought of sensual pleasure than by the sensual pleasure itself. The Buddha tells us of a blind man who proudly wears and proclaims satisfaction in possessing what he was told by a crooked merchant was a white cloth, beautiful, spotless, and clean, but is in fact a dirty, soiled garment. We often appropriate what we have yet to acquire. Many people see riches, fame, or success in their future, or an imminent business tycoon, or an about-to-get-lucky lottery winner in their chair, or a yet-to-be-discovered star or celebrity looking back at them in the mirror. We often appropriate as me or mine what we have long lost. For instance, youth and beauty, even as we get older, chubbier, feebler, drunker, duller, and less attractive. All of these things define who we think we are. We'll look more closely at the major theme of sensuality in following talks. Let's look at appropriating views. Views, ditti, about how the world functions and what our role in that world is, come naturally to the thinking and learning creatures who constitute the human race. Product of self-centered beings, these views tend to focus on our own interests, and we tend to appropriate views that advance those interests. Many of the views we start with come from our culture through civic, moral, or religious education, views about fairness, social responsibility, and so on. I suspect that we often appropriate such views simply because we seek stability in time-honored ways to order the world. This is especially true of the elderly who are characteristically socially conservative. For instance, about gender equality, LGBT rights, tattoos, what passes for music, and so on. Views about matters conditionally related to our personal advantage are certainly prominent candidates for appropriation. Once we appropriate one object, we are likely to appropriate the things upon which that object depends. For instance, we appropriated our stock portfolio because we view this as enabling the sensual pleasures and social status that we had already appropriated. We then appropriated a politico-economic philosophy that enables, justifies, and helps defend our hefty stock portfolio. Likewise, we appropriate social status because we view it as being to our personal advantage, then appropriate an array of socially constructed views, most of them otherwise of dubious merit, that define that social status, for instance, concerning our education, wealth, or social class, along with views about what is to be regarded as superior or inferior. The Buddha warns his monks against this particular kind of appropriation.
Bhikkhus, what is the character of an untrue man? Here, an untrue man who has gone forth from an aristocratic family considers this. I have gone forth from an aristocratic family, but these other bhikkhus have not gone forth from aristocratic families. So he lauds himself and disparages others because of his aristocratic family. This is the character of an untrue man.
This passage is repeated as for an aristocratic family, so for a wealthy family, then for enjoying fame, then for receiving abundant alms food and robes, then for having a good education, then for being a teacher, then for attaining jhanas, then for dwelling in the wilderness, then for wearing rag robes, and then for eating but one meal a day. Nonetheless, monks' resources for lauding self and disparaging others are relatively limited. The rich array of social categories available to lay people affords even greater opportunities. Having appropriated a particular social class, we appropriate views about how one of that status presents himself in the world. This illustrates a way in which views limit us. A tycoon will not be caught dead driving a Toyota or even traveling without a chauffeur, and a new PhD feels humiliated if forced to drive a taxi to make ends meet. For these behaviors step beyond the presumed bounds of the appropriated personality. Others, convinced of their inferiority in some aspect of their lives, limit themselves by presuming limits on what they might accomplish. For belonging to the wrong caste, gender, or educational level. Once appropriated, the ferocity with which we defend our views is comparable to how we defend our material assets. A contradiction to an appropriated view easily becomes a matter of personal attack. A psychotherapist I know who provides marriage counseling will put it to his clients at a critical impasse. Would you rather be right or would you rather get along? He's always amazed at how many would rather be right. Venerable Kachana warns us that where lay people commonly fight over sensuality, it is monks who are most prone to fighting over views, albeit generally views about the Dhamma. It is Brahman because of adherence to lust for sensual pleasures, bondage to sensual pleasures, that Kattiyas fight with Kattiyas, Brahmins with Brahmins and householders with householders. It is Brahman because of adherence to lust for views, bondage to views, that ascetics fight with ascetics. So, let's talk about appropriating conduct and observances. Conduct and observances, silabbata, which are concerned with how we function effectively in the world, come naturally to the active creatures who constitute the human race. They might include working out at the gym, playing chess, hosting formal dinners, partying like there is no tomorrow, deporting ourselves in certain ways that also may become part of our personality. Many of the practices are religious or Buddhist in nature. Special magical rites and incantations, meditation, bowing, reciting the refuges and precepts. Typically, not to be able to engage in an appropriated habit or practice, such as when the gym is closed, is a cause of distress. We generally appropriate conduct and observances because we presume some efficacy in them that benefits us personally. In this sense, they are the active counterpart of appropriated views. In fact, the presumed efficacy of the behavior generally is an appropriated view. The Pali for conduct and observances is sila, conduct, plus vata, observance. We know sila as precepts or virtuous behavior, but it actually has a range of meanings that includes nature, character, habit, or behavior, not always virtuous. Vata is defined as a religious duty observance, practice, or custom. So, most generally, we can understand Sīlabbaṭa as conduct and observances. It's sometimes translated by modern authors as attachment to rites and rituals. But this seems to narrow the scope of this term unnecessarily to devotional religious practices. To observe certain conduct and observances does not itself constitute appropriation. Just hold them lightly. For instance, the Buddha recommended adherence to prevailing social conventions and etiquette for the sake of harmonizing with others. There are those who eschew social conventions as restrictive, but nonconformity is just another conduct or observance, one that tends particularly toward appropriation, because it's most often an attempt to individuate its agent. Certain social classes have their own characteristic social conventions, like drinking white wine with fish. Often these behaviors are appropriated among the snobs to underscore appropriated group identity. Let's stop here for today. Next week, we'll discuss appropriating self-doctrine, then consider techniques for limiting or ending our vexing tendency to appropriate things as me or mine.